I'm really pleased to be here. I feel, I don't know if you feel the same, but I feel very optimistic today. First of all, I see all these young people who worked hard with dedication to bring about this event, and we should really salute them for that. At a time when there are clouds, dark clouds, which make some people, you know, feel depressed, events like these raises your spirit. Also, I'd say that in the last few years, even though there have been setbacks, there have been major victories. The first victory by the Arab people was the victory of Hezbollah in the liberation of the southern part of the country. This was the first time that an Arab resistance movement was able to defeat and force the Zionist enemy to withdraw from Arab lands. And recently, we should all be saluting the Palestinian people who did not succumb to the bullying, the intimidation, the blackmail by the United States, by the European Union, and they were able to elect representatives which reflect their aspirations and their objectives. And they did that even though they were facing an army of an enemy which is the fourth military power in the world that's backed by the only superpower in the world. So the Palestinian people are really an example for all the dispossessed, for all those who are disadvantaged, the disenfranchised in the world. And that means people who are on welfare in Canada, the minorities which are persecuted against, who face discrimination, they set an example that when a people is determined and they have a leadership which knows what they want and are steadfast in maintaining their principles, that they can withstand any power, any oppressive power. So this is a great victory for not only the Palestinians, the Arabs and the Muslims, but for all dispossessed and disadvantaged people in the world. Now, previous speakers have spoken about the challenges that face the Palestinian people. And as I said, these are unique challenges. In the case of South Africa, the apartheid regime was not backed directly by the world community. But here you have an apartheid regime backed by the only superpower, backed by Western countries which have imperialist designs because of their past colonial historic experiences in Asia and Africa and in Latin America. And yet, they are struggling for six decades, and they have been able to, even though they have been beaten physically, their spirit is still stronger than ever. Actually, in the last year or two, I have seen the spirit of the Palestinian people is becoming stronger, resisting, and they're coming back to their basic goals. Their basic goals, which had been clouded in the last few years since Oslo, because Oslo focused on a recognition of the State of Israel and accepting the occupation of the majority of the land, or relinquishing the majority of the land of Palestine to the enemy. Now we have a leadership in Palestine that says, represents what the Palestinians want. They say, we want, first of all, the ending of all the occupation with all its manifestation, the apartheid wall, the settlements, everything. Second, we want the recognition by the world community and Israel specifically of the right of the Palestinian refugees to return to their homeland. And third, and which is as important, is that within Israel itself, that the Arab-Palestinian citizens of Israel should be granted equality. We will not accept that any country in the world treats its citizens with inferiorities, with discrimination, either in Canada, in Israel, or anywhere in the world. And the Palestinians are espousing that. And here we face a phenomenon, as Dr. Noble said, and also my brother Hanna Kawas said, you know, it's a unique phenomenon because we are facing, you know, we are facing a racist colonialist ideology that's backed by the colonialist mentality which permeates countries like Britain, the United States, France, and others. See, and we should understand why is it that the major support for Israel comes from the United States. United States is a country, and so is Canada to the same extent. These are countries which were built on sin, in the sense that they committed the genocide of the indigenous people, and they refused to recognize that. They refused to recognize that we have committed a sin in this country against the indigenous population. And they even boast that they are a beacon of democracy and human rights to the world. So the moment that these governments in North America realize and acknowledge that they committed a crime, there might become a change in the decrease of their support for Israel. But Israel is basically a repetition of the experiment, the historical experiment, which has happened in North America, an attempt to liquidate the indigenous population through either physical liquidation or enslavement. But they are barking up the wrong tree. The Palestinians will not succumb, and they have a depth of support in the Arab world and in the Muslim world. And this is where the Zionist enterprise and this colonialist enterprise is going to fail. Now, also, as Professor Noble was telling me during the break, also Zionism, this concept, has been able to use and abuse the Old Testament. I'm a Palestinian Christian, and I remember when I first came to Canada, I went outside an Arab Christian church trying to distribute some leaflet about a Palestinian meeting. And this old Arab Canadian woman who was born in Canada said, "Why are you against Israel? The Bible says, you know, that the Jews have to come to Palestine, and then Armageddon will happen, two-thirds of them will die, and the remaining one-third will become Christians when the Messiah comes." You know, this is what we're facing also, this ignorance by Zionist Christians. Not ignorance, the Zionist Christians might know about it, some of the leadership, but most of the Zionist Christians are ignorant. They believe what the Old Testament say, that this is a land that God, a real estate man, gave to Jews, and only Jews can live there, and then Christ will come one day and make them all Christians, and we'll get rid of all these Jews. This is what they believe, you know. They are anti-Semites, basically, and they want all the Jews to gather there, and then Christ will come and smite them and make them Christians. So these are the problems we're facing also. There is this, you know, we're facing a religious, colonialist, racialist experiment, enterprise, and we have to be able to address all these fallacies. Now, how is Israel treating its Arab inhabitants? This has been dealt with already regarding the law of return and regarding the Israeli land laws, which state the Israeli land authority in Israel is assigned 92% of the state of the land of Palestine, which is state-owned land, and they have to abide by the regulation of the Jewish National Fund. The Jewish National Fund collects money in Canada, which is tax deductible. The regulations of the Jewish National Fund states clearly that the state-owned lands in Palestine can only be rented or leased to Jews. So that means automatically any Palestinian Christian or Muslims cannot rent or lease this land. So this is out of circulation. At the same time, immediately after the creation of the State of Israel in 1948, they passed absentee laws, which means they kick out the people and then they say, if you don't come back to your property within 6 months, the state takes it, it becomes state-owned land, and from then on, no Arab can use that land. Very smart. I was in Nazareth last year in September. My father is from Nazareth, so I went there, spent a few days there. And in Nazareth, there's a neighborhood called the Safafira neighborhood. And I asked them, what is this? Said, these are the people who come from Safuri. Safuri is a town 3 kilometers from Nazareth, downhill. Nazareth is on a small mountain, and Safuri is down below. In 1948, the Zionist militias came, attacked Safuri, destroyed it, and forced all the inhabitants to leave. So all of these inhabitants came to Nazareth. And within 6 months, they were not allowed to return to their lands. So after 6 months, the state took the land, and they built on that land a Zionist settlement called Zipporim. So here you have 20,000 people in Nazareth, in Safuri, on the hill, overlooking their town downstairs, which is a few kilometers, every evening or in the morning. They sit there and they see their homes, their land, and they cannot go there because they are absentee landowners, according to Israeli definition. There's 300,000 internally displaced Palestinian citizens of Israel who, through this machination, have been denied the right to return to their villages and town and farmlands. So this is how they accomplish this ethnic cleansing of the land that they want to take over. The citizenship laws of Israel, which was passed in 1952, it says, you know, anybody who wants to become a citizen must have resided in Israel for at least 7 years, and he has to swear allegiance to the state of Israel. But if you are a Jew, you go there immediately, you don't have to swear allegiance, and you become a citizen. So that's a clear discriminatory law. ID cards are identified by the presence or absence of a date if you are a Jew or not. That's how they keep track of who is a Jew and who's not a Jew. And so during the call for military service, there are enumerators in the state whose responsibility is to call people for the draft. These enumerators, by the ID, determine who is a Jew and who is not a Jew. So they only send a call to be drafted to Jews and Druzes. Okay? Christians and Muslims are not drafted. Now, the excuse that they use is, we don't want these Arab Christians and Muslims to fight their Arab brethren in the neighboring country in case there's a war. But this is a fake excuse, because the Druze are also Arab. But they've been able to co-opt the leadership of the Druze. It's a small sect, and they were able to get their loyalty to the state. The reason that they do this choice is only to select Jews and Druzes is because if you serve in the army, you automatically have rights, special rights. So if you're a Christian or a Muslim and you had not served in the army, you face restrictions in employment, in education. And that means that most of the government jobs are out of circulation for you. Now, yeshiva students, who are religious Jewish students, do not serve in the army. But the enumerator sends them a call for a draft. So, and then they come for the interview, and they tell him, I'm a religious student. Then they are excused. But because they've been called to the draft, they qualify for all the special rights of people who had served in the army. So they have a special rule for the yeshiva students. Why don't they apply the same thing for the Christians and Muslims? Tell them, okay, we ask you to come to a draft, come for the interview, but then you say, I don't want to serve, but you still then are qualified to be employed and educated like all the other Jews who are called into the army. So, now, examples on the ground of this discrimination, which is all based on the fact that the state defines itself as a as a democratic Jewish state, which is an oxymoron, because you can either be democratic or you can either be Jewish. If you say you're a Jewish democratic state, you're negating the existence of 20% of the population, which are Christians and Muslims. So how could you be democratic? Because of that, you have these practices now. The Arab municipalities in Israel proper receive 1/3 of the funding of an equivalent Jewish municipality. So here is Nazareth, which is an Arab town of 74,000. They built in the 50s, they started building another Jewish settlement called Nazareth Elite, which has a population of 35,000, half the population of Nazareth. However, they encircled Arab Nazareth with a highway, which they said was for transportation purposes. But the intention was to tell them, this is how far you can expand. You are stuck in this area. So now Arab Nazareth, which in 1948 had a population of 20,000, is now close to 80,000, has no playgrounds, no parks. Most of the streets don't have sidewalks. People cannot find a place to build their homes, so they just keep adding a floor when they have more children. So there's no green space in Arab Nazareth. You go to Jewish Nazareth, which is half the population, has three times the land. There are parks, there's water, there's trees, there's playgrounds. And all the government services for Arab Nazareth are located in Jewish Nazareth. So the courts, the police headquarters, anything you want to renew your citizenship, your birth certificate, they are all located in the Jewish Nazareth, because they want to tell the Arabs, the center of power is there in the Jewish side. You guys are just there. You are their workers who will be called to do construction work and menial works, but you have no rights. The religious tourists, all the tourists which go to Israel, they don't sleep in Arab Nazareth. All the religious sites are in Arab Nazareth. The Church of the Annunciation, all the religious sites are in Arab Nazareth. But they bring the guides with the tourists to Arab Nazareth. They spend a few hours, they don't even buy things, and they go and sleep in Jewish Nazareth. This is why economically Arab Nazareth is suffering. And the hotels, the same thing, the malls, all of these are being built in Jewish Nazareth. However, even with all of that, the people in Arab Nazareth have become much more militant, in the sense that they identify now that they are a part and parcel of the Palestinian people. When they have parades, scout parades, or any type of election parades, they carry the Palestinian flags. And they say, we are part of the Palestinian people. And 2 days ago, in Lud was an Arab town which was completely obliterated, and now it's mostly Jewish. 2 days ago, the commemoration of Land Day was held in Lud. The Arabs of all over Israel came to Lud to remember. The massacres and the dispossession and the ethnic cleansing which happened not only in 1976 when that massacre happened, but before in 1948. So the Palestinians inside of Israel, even though they're discriminated against, are able to withstand all of this. They have maintained their identity strongly. And you see that in the sense that the coastline is all Jewish settlements and towns, but the interior of the country, the Galilee, is 51% Arab still. The Negev is also, there's still lots of Arabs. The Triangle is 80% Arab. And this is why the withdrawal from Gaza, or any withdrawals which will happen from the West Bank, if some occur, the plan is to move all these settlers into the Galilee and the Negev, because they want to continue the Judaization of the Galilee and the Negev. This was in 1976, the Koenig report said, our threat is not external, our threat is a demographic internal threat. The Arab population in Israel are still a majority in the northern part of the country and in the south, and we have to change the demographic balance. Because for them, the presence of Arabs in Israel is a threat. They do not want that. And they will continue to try to change the percentage. They've been unsuccessful because even in 1948, after the expulsion of the majority of the Palestinian population which remained comprised 20% of the total population. So 600,000 Jews plus 150,000 Arabs were remained behind. So the Arabs were about 20%. And through this 6 decades, we've had millions of Jewish immigrants coming from Russia, from the Arab countries. And today, the percentage of the Arab population is still 20%. So Golda Meir used to say, I have nightmares whenever I wake up because I know another child, an Arab child was born. They cannot stop this assembly line that's coming out with all these Arab children. And that's why they cannot win. You know, there's no way they can win. And this is reflected, this racism is reflected in the, it's been increasing. The more that they really make peace with Arab governments like Jordan and Egypt, they start clamping down more on their Arab-Palestinian population. Azmi Bshara, who's the leader of an Arab party there, said, you know, the racism against Arabs has been increasing tremendously. And the Latin Archbishop of occupied Palestine, who's Michel Sabah, who is a relative of my wife, she's Catholic, I'm not, but she's Catholic, he's the Archbishop. And on the 3rd of March, a Jewish extremist went into the Basilica of Annunciation in Nazareth. For those of you who are Christians, or for those who are not Christians, you may not know this, but the Basilica of Annunciation in Nazareth is one of the holiest places in the world. This is, inside this church, there's a grotto. They say this is the location where the angel Gabriel came to Mary and told her, you're going to be impregnated with a child who will be Jesus. So on that location, they built this church, and it's a very holy place for Christians, for Christian believers. This Jewish extremist went into the church with the intention of causing damage. He was he threw some firecrackers, he had some gas canisters. They finally stopped him, and they tried to grab him. The priests in the church hid him in the back of the church. The police came, and when the citizens in Nazareth heard about this event, they came by the thousands, Muslims and Christians, from Nazareth, from the surrounding villages, to protect an Arab holy site. They came, and the police came not to protect the church. They came to protect this lunatic Jewish extremist who was inside, and they used tear gas. They came with helicopters through tear gas. My son-in-law was one of the people who was impacted by sound also, sound, they call them sound bombs. He lost his hearing for a little while. And the police arrested tens of people. That's what the police did. And then they said, the Arab Muslims are trying to use this event for their own aim. They say, they feel that only Christians should defend Arab holy sites. Muslims should not. They try to split the Arab Muslim and Christian from each other. This is the mentality, a racist mentality, which always tries to do that. And this is why the Archbishop Michel Sabah said, the act of this person he may be crazy or anything, but it reflects the racism which permeates all levels of Israeli society. Because, I mean, assuming this person was crazy and he did not do it on a religious or a nationalist basis, if you're crazy and you are from Haifa, which is predominantly Jewish, or from Tel Aviv, why do you travel all the way to Nazareth, which is an Arab town, and attack an Arab church? Go and attack, you know, a Jewish place in Haifa. But because he has been bred on racism, that the Arabs are targets which can be attacked, and you can attack them with impunity, because nobody is going to punish you if you attack an Arab. Yeah, well, he may be crazy, but you see, the thing is, he knows, he still is a smart crazy. He knows if he attacks an Arab religious site, he'll get away with it. But if he goes to a Jewish restaurant, he's gonna end up in prison. And so these are the things. And another example is my nephew was there visiting, and she went with a friend who is an Israeli Arab to a restaurant in Haifa. And the moment that the owner of the restaurant, who was a Russian Jew, by the way, found out that she's Arab, he told her, "We don't serve Arab dogs, get out." So she got out, but she started talking back at the owner. And the owner was a woman too, a Russian woman. She came out, started hitting her. Finally, the police came, and she said, I want to file a complaint. And the police said, look, you can file a complaint, but you know you're not gonna win this. Because in the end, the testimony of a Jew has more weight in courts than the testimony of an Arab. So she did not file a complaint. And this is what people face harassment constantly, and they know that they have no recourse to the police, to the authorities, to the courts. Because in the end, the courts will find them either innocent or charge them one shekel, as they did on one occasion. Now, even inside Israeli cities, which have a minority of Arabs, like Ramle has 10% Arab only. I saw a documentary on Ramle, and they showed this a neighborhood in Ramle, which is predominantly Arab. And there was a Jewish woman there, and they asked her, are there any other Jews? She said, no, I'm the only Jew left here. And they said, why? She said, when the Arabs started coming, the Jews left. But I'm the only one left because I'm poor, I cannot afford to go to some other place. And then he asked her, do you know your neighbors? She said, yeah, I say hello to them. He said, have you ever visited them or asked them to visit? She said, no, because they're Arabs, you know? This is how it goes. People live in the same area. She's the only Jew there. And she says, I can't visit them because they're Arabs, and they can't invite them because they're... So the racism has permeated the souls of the individual in that country. And that's sad, you know? That's the saddest part. In Ramle now, they built a wall to separate the Arab neighborhood from the Jewish areas. Even in Ramle, which is an Israeli city, they built this wall. It's not only on the west, inside the West Bank. So, now, as a result of this, you have all these religious persecutions, which we've talked about. For example, in 1948, after the creation of the State of Israel, not only 500 villages were destroyed, hundreds of mosques were destroyed. The mosques were not only destroyed, others were turned into nightclubs, restaurants. In Beer Sheba, which is in the Negev area, Al-Naqab, there was a mosque there which they turned into a museum. Now, through the years, the Arabs in the Negev started to increase. And now there's about 100,000 Arabs in the Negev area. And they said, we want to pray, we need a mosque. And there's a mosque in Beer Sheba. And the city mayor said, no, this is a museum, you cannot use it. So he said, no, we want it reopened as a mosque. So he refused. So in Ramadan, they planned to come and pray there. So he brought trucks of fertilizers, threw them on all the grounds around the mosque so that this would keep people away. They came with their carpets, they laid the carpets on top of the fertilizers, and they prayed. And this mayor says, we cannot open this place as a mosque, because if you open it as a mosque, then the Arabs will move to Beersheba, and slowly they'll become a majority. We don't want Beersheba to become an Arab town. We want it to remain predominantly Jewish town. And they get away with this. They can do these things and get away with it. Al-Ibrahimi Mosque in February of 94, a fanatic Kakh, member of Kakh, came into the mosque. There were 800 people playing, praying. He killed 50 of them. He injured 300. They killed him in the end because, you know, those who survived attacked him, killed him. In the settlement of Kiryat Arba, where this guy comes from, they built a shrine for him. This is in 94. It took the government of Israel 6 years until they banned the Kakh party and until they forced the settlers there to remove the shrine. Now, if an Arab had done this in the West Bank, if an Arab had attacked an Israeli soldier, they bulldozed his house, they put him in jail, they put his family in jail. And this guy, for 6 years, he was a hero. His shrine was visited by thousands, tens of thousands of Israelis all the time. Al-Aqsa Mosque in 69, an Australian Jew came, started a fire to the mosque, and again they said, he's a crazy Jew. Okay, you're a crazy Jew, go attack the majority of the population, which is Jewish. Why do you attack the Arabs always? Then there is a cemetery in Jerusalem. It's a 1,000-year-old cemetery, and the native people here will feel with us. The cemeteries for us, the ground where your ancestors, your history is, are sacred places. Simon Wiesenthal Center, which fights always for, against anti-Semites, planned to build a museum of tolerance on that graveyard. Can you believe this? Simon Wiesenthal Center, which always talks about human rights and fighting anti-Semitism, has started building a museum of tolerance. They say this is a museum to improve understanding between religions and ethnic groups. And the Muslims there say, this is waqf land, this is sacred land. So they get away with that because the courts will rule in their favor. In the end, the courts will rule, you know, you go to the courts, who pays, who has more money, who has lawyers, and the judges will vote in favor of the owners, you know, who have money. Now you have in Jerusalem, Palestinian Christians comprised 20% of the population in 1948. Now they are only 2%, okay? Now, you read in the news in the last few days, there's a Christian in Afghanistan, a Muslim who converted to Christian, and all the media are saying, what, you know, these Muslim fanatics, look what they're doing to this poor Christian. They want to kill him. Well, you know, in the Holy Land, where Jesus Christ was born, where you have all the holy places, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, all of these places, Christians are victimized. And according to the Archbishop, the Catholic Latin Archbishop, he says, this racism is directed particularly against Christians and Arabs in general. He says specifically Christians. Christians of the Holy Land are leaving, and the Christians in the West are fighting for Christians in Afghanistan, but nobody raises their voice for the Christians in the Holy Land. So this is a double standard. It shows you that they really, this is all created by the establishment here. They want to make this clash. It's clash between Islam and Judaism, and Christianity has to side with Judaism. But the clash is not between religions. The clash is between political ideologies. One what calls for racism, which is Zionism, and another one that calls for equality and inclusiveness, which is what the Palestinians want. And so these are, so inside of Jerusalem, the monks, Armenian monks, not even Arab monks, are spit upon by yeshiva students regularly. And when the monks were asked, and I have the article here from Haaretz, and when the monks were asked, why don't you go and complain to the police? They said, because we know the police won't do anything. They attack them regularly on the streets. They spit on them. On one occasion, an archbishop, Armenian archbishop, was walking in the street during Easter with a cross, and he was attacked by yeshiva students, and nothing, and the police did not do anything. Because these yeshiva students are encouraged by the atmosphere in the state, the race atmosphere, to attack these monks and get away with it. It's not only, so this is, they want this to be a purely Jewish state because of this fanatic ideology that they've been bred with. And the Christian West, which cares about, which talks about Christianity and democracy and the rule of law, does not mention all of these incidents that are occurring. There's no coverage of this. I've talked to reporters here. They say, yeah, but the Arab countries are not better. This is the excuse they use. I mean, who's talking about Arab countries? We are talking about Canada supporting a country like Israel because they claim that Israel is a democracy. And here is a country which is racist, discriminating, persecuting people on religious grounds, ethnic grounds, and Canada continues to support it and back it. So, and then they say Hamas is a terrorist organization. I read the program of Hamas on the website in Arabic. And the program of Hamas says Palestine, in Palestine, Christians and Muslims, because majority of Christians, lived for centuries together. And the Christians remained 20%, by the way, during all this Muslim majority rule, which was from the 7th century. But yet, during Israel's rule in 6 decades, the Christians have dwindled to 2%. So, and Hamas says Palestinian Christians and Palestinian Muslims are brothers with equal rights and responsibilities. We have no quarrel with the Jews as a religion. Our quarrel is with them as a political movement that has usurped our land and denies us equality and the return of our refugees. So Canadians who really believe in fighting racism should be siding with the Palestinians. And people who believe that the disenfranchised, the weak, the poor, the people who are defenseless, dispossessed, should have equal rights in society should be standing by the Palestinians. Now, I know we are in a society here which is unique because, as I said, this country was built on sin. And until we recognize the crimes we committed against our native people, until our politicians, our elite, our intelligentsia accepts and recognizes this, instead of building a museum for Holocaust, what happened to the Jews in Europe, the first priority should be to build a museum of genocide for what happened to the Indians in this country. Because we were not responsible for what happened to the Jews in Europe. The Canadians were not responsible. The Arabs were not responsible. But the ones who established this country were responsible for the genocide that happened to the Indians. At the same time, I can understand why the United States is such a strong supporter. Because the United States is a country of hypocrisy. It's not only a country which was built on the genocide of the Indians. Then they dispossessed 100 million Africans, brought them into the United States. They made them Christians, and they kept them enslaved. You make a person a Christian, and you keep him a slave. Where in Christianity it says a Christian can enslave another Christian? And these people then, Bush and his allies, say, we are the beacon of democracy, human rights. So this is the problem we're facing. We have to expose these things. And as I said, I was confident by staying 10 days in Nazareth that Israel is losing, regardless of how much power they have. They have not been able to destroy the spirit of the Israeli Arab Palestinians, who are only 1.3 million. These people have been, for 58 years, have been discriminated against, harassed, and they are now more strongly identified as Palestinians. They are more strongly demanding their rights. They have established a union of all the civil societies inside of occupied Palestine called Ittijah, and they constantly demand and work for exposing the racism in Israel, and they appeal to the United Nations for protection, and they want us to expose all of these things, because in the end, Israel cannot hide this from the public opinion. And this is why in Canada and the United States, the Zionists have become much more vicious. They are attacking our civil and human rights. This is why laws have been passed not only for the benefit of the establishment, which wants also to keep the minorities in this country under subservience, but they also want to prevent the Canadian, average Canadian person to know what is happening in the world. Al Jazeera television station, the Canadian Jewish Congress lobbied to prevent Al Jazeera programs from being aired in Canada unless they are being censored. I was in Israel. Al Jazeera is aired freely in Israel. Why? Because in Israel, the Arabs don't have the power. The Arab Israelis don't have the power to change the system. They are a minority. Even if all of them say, oh, we know now that Israel is bad, they cannot change the system. But in Canada, if the people in Canada find out what Israel is doing, they will start questioning their leadership. Why are you siding with a racist society? The book Three Wishes, which was a simple book, I've read the book. It's actually, I don't like it because it's equating the victim with the aggressor. It equates Palestinian children with Israeli children. But as you read it, you absorb the fact that there's an occupation, which is a terrible occupation. It's affecting school children and all of that. The Canadian Jewish Congress didn't want our children here to read these things because this is dangerous. If people start learning this, these children will grow up, become adults, and then question their government. Why are you supporting a country which is occupying a people and oppressing them? So these are the things they're doing, and they want us here to remain, they want the Canadian average person to remain ignorant so that the government, the elite, which has its own agenda, colonialist, exploitative, will continue in this support of this racial colonialist and enterprise in the Holy Land. And yet, as I said, my daughter who was born in Canada, she said, Dad, the battleground is Palestine, and now she's in Nazareth. And this is what I say, we are going to win the battle, and nobody is going to stop the Palestinians.